Welcome to the month 5 investable ETR briefing that covers the trading period from the 1st of May to the 31st of May 2023. Once again, we will be continuing with this new style of briefing as of recent months. I hope you all found it interesting as we look closer at what is happening with Credit Exchange. So firstly, today we'll begin by looking at one of our shipping originators and a unique trade we structured for them. Next, we will show you some of the work that goes on at our deal desk and some of the potential projects the team are looking at. There also will be our monthly segments on the Seaborne report and the state of the European and global economies. And then we will look at the briefing itself and some of the key information from it and some updates on credit. So for now, our first topic, I'll hand you back to Andrew.
Thanks for that, Ruby. So for today's originator piece, we're going to look at a shipping transaction that was completed on the exchange. But the reason I want to discuss this particular transaction, though, is that there is a feature of this trade that we actually haven't discussed before, as it only further conveys Credit's ability to adapt and create flexible structures and deals for our originators. This originator in discussion has over 10 years of experience transporting butane and propane with national and international gas companies in Kosovo and Albania. In August 2021, Credit purchased a vessel for this originator for 4.839 million euro, with Credit providing 2.5 million euro of the necessary funds. And as always, for our circa 50% payment, we received the full ownership of this vessel, with the originator retaining use of the vessel for charters while making a monthly repayment to Credit. A year later, with nearly 1 million euro repaid so far, the originator then approached Credit looking for further asset financing, as they were looking to add a new system to the vessel, along with getting the special survey completed. This is kind of the equivalent of the NCTE for a ship. It also requested for them to be included in the lease through an addendum. The amount requested to complete these tasks was circa 700,000 euro. At that moment, taking into account all the payments made in the previous year, this would have increased our maximum exposure on that originator to just shy of 2.5 million euro. Now, even though the original deal with the originator was asset finance, or ATR as we call it, and is a type of finance we are very familiar with, this would be the first time where we're increasing the value of the lease during the term by adding a fixed addition to a vessel. It was decided that this will actually benefit Credit, as we will now own a higher valued vessel. Then, when creating the addendum, the structure of the trade would actually be completely rewritten. Previously, the originator was paying directly to Credit due to a payment needing to be made to the managers of the vessel from the charter party income. It was changed to fall in line with the rest of our shipping trades. So some of you may remember, this means that all charter party income must flow through Credit's bank accounts from the charterer. Credit then would make payment to the managers of the vessel, taking the repayment stated in the addendum, and then return any excess, if there was any, to the originator. The fact that there was already a pre-agreed charter with guaranteed income was an important factor in Credit's decision. This transaction shows how we are continuously looking for new ways to improve the business and find new business opportunities. Establishing relationships with these shipping companies over the past number of years has been very beneficial for the exchange, and hopefully will continue to do so in the future. This one deal has been a particular success. Earlier this year, further work was carried out to improve the vessel to change its class, which now allows it to enter a higher level of port and secure contracts for higher levels of work. With this particular class of vessel in extremely high demand, the vessel has once again become even more valuable. The originator recently informed the exchange of an offer to purchase the vessel that they rejected. The offer was for over double the original purchase price of the vessel, but is believed a higher value could be achieved as the monthly income attainable has actually also increased. This all stems from the completion of the addendum transaction. A first-time transaction for us has helped our originator exponentially, with Credit also in line to reap some of the reward. Once again, this shows that if there is a viable deal to be done, Credit will find a way to finance it and make it work. As with this new style of briefing, it isn't just about telling you the numbers. We want to explain the business better and provide a further look into the operations of what goes on in Credit daily. So, and how we're going to use and protect your clients' funds. then, keeping with this, as we have done for the last few months, I'm now going to pass you over to Patrick to talk you through some of the potential deals that could happen in the future.
Thanks, Andrew. And again, hi, everyone. As Andrew has explained, it's my job to talk about potential deals going through in the deal desk, things that we're currently working on. And as is usual, we have a few interesting ones going on as we speak. There's always an appetite for food or commodities trading, which allows for a lot of these deals to come our way. So this month is no different than any other. We have a possible transaction for a UK company looking to finance the sale of coffee from Cameroon into customers in Central Europe. And while we've been presented with a first for the exchange in the recent weeks, that would be a first for us in terms of being a coffee trade. We have other deals that we have declined in that space for lots of reasons, typically because we're not happy with who the off-taker or who the buyer is, or other reasons that we don't like the originator. We don't think that they have the capability or capacity to actually put the trade together, or their previous trading history is not adequate. So, for example, the company might only be operating for a short period of time, and they think that we're going to finance it simply because we're in the business. We have another transaction for a company in Italy looking to finance the buying and selling of frozen meat. So we obviously prepare for this meeting prior to it actually taking place. So the preparation was done yesterday and completed early this morning. But even since writing our notes for this meeting, that particular frozen meat transaction has basically been cancelled, again, because we're not satisfied with the method of which this Italian company is operating. So they were supposed to be sourcing the meat from the UK. Given my own background in farming from County Louth, I have a little bit of knowledge there, which of course is always a dangerous thing. But the processing plant was in Malaysia, and then it was been sent on to customers in China. There's too many moving parts in the transaction. And for that and other reasons, we declined to proceed. There is one deal, however, that's rather interesting. Coming out of Slovenia regarding the sale of timber out of Slovenia, again, across Europe and potentially the Middle East and even North Africa. This particular company, the timber trade is a very small trade, albeit hugely important. I suppose like every specialist trade, the number of parties in that particular community, even on a global basis, is quite small. So this particular company is based in Slovenia, and it's a partnership between the Slovenian freight operator and a timber trader that's based in Salzburg in Austria. So these two independent companies came together, I'd say about 18 months ago. Independently, they've both been in business for 10 and 20 years type period. But the big issue in the timber trade is that unless you're a very large exporter of timber, there is no real market for your product, being a mid-sized sawmill or mid-sized producer, as they're called. So with this particular Slovenian freight operator, who's familiar with the timber, the transporting of timber, combining his knowledge with that of the trader who's based in Salzburg, they've come up with this online platform that makes it possible for these small and more so medium-sized sawmills to come to their platform. Using their platform, a lot of the headaches and unknowns of selling timber from be it Ireland into the UK or from Slovenia into Africa. They've taken out all the mystery of how the process works, and it's an online system where buyers and sellers can both come together, a bit like an Alibaba for timber. And in doing so, this particular company will actually then provide all of the paperwork, all of the checks and balances that are necessary to provide the security that the buyer needs in terms of getting the timber that they actually ordered. And from the seller's point of view, making sure that they, in selling the timber, are ultimately going to get paid. It does use documentary credits, other components of a transaction like that, involving all the various documentary requirements, the certifications, certificates of origin, all that kind of stuff, and puts it all together in an easy to understand system whereby the seller can now export outside their boundaries using this pretty slick system, I have to say, where previously they would have had to take quite a leap of faith to export on their own. So these two companies come together, they form this online timber trading platform, which I think's got pretty good legs. They've already got several orders ready to be processed through it. The reason why they came to us is to combine our knowledge of how the financial aspect of a transaction like that will work alongside their market knowledge. So there was a certain similarity between their online platform and what we do ourselves for lots of other people by operating the exchange. So I've, as recently as a couple of hours ago, sent them back the last set of requirements that we need. And please God, that'll actually turn out to be a very good online platform where we will be the provider of the know-how, the knowledge, and indeed the finance that's required to make these transactions work. And ultimately, in every case, without exception, we will be ultimately buying bank debt. So in other words, the buyer will be issuing letters of credit, and it's against those that we will be providing the finance. By virtue of the fact that we have access to the platform and we will provide the standard templates for the trading of the particular timbers in question, it means that we have a good inside knowledge of exactly what's going on and good traceability on how the transaction will work. So it takes a lot of the difficulty out of a medium-sized sawmill producer trying to export outside their borders, which they would not have been able to do without the help of this company and indeed hopefully our good selves. So I think that's a very interesting prospect and I suppose a good example of the type of flexibility that we have, bringing our systems together with another person's systems and making them work together as one overall service that is easy to use for people who would not otherwise have access to those markets. So that's as much as I can give you on the interesting transactions that we're doing at the moment, apart from the other mundane ones. So I think it's back to you, Andrew.
Brent, thanks, Patrick. And as I said, as always, it's always great to hear some of the deals that you and the deal desk are looking at. Hopefully we are succeeding in conveying a clear image of what happens within Credit on the daily. So as discussed before, Credit will always keep an eye on what is going on in the world, looking to write new business. Trades that have a significant relevance to today's current affairs will always be available as they are what the world and the market are focusing on. If we look to the seaborne reports that tend to cover the major activity that could affect shipping and economies, there is once again a running theme for the previous month, with multiple articles talking about the Saudi oil cuts that are looming. In late May, Saudi Arabia's energy minister said he would inflict more pain on short sellers and told them to watch out just days before a planned OPEC Plus meeting to decide on the future oil policy. The outcome of this meeting was for further cuts to come to the production of oil. Saudi Arabia will make a deep cut to its output in July on top of a broader OPEC Plus deal to limit supply into 2024 as the group seeks to boost flagging oil prices. Saudi's energy ministry said the country's output would drop to 9 million barrels per day in July from around 10 million barrels per day in May. And this is actually the biggest reduction in years. If we step away from oil, there's somewhat of a dramatic U-turn in the ability of China to be the savior of the global economy. Last month, I discussed that there was an article how the G7 is seeking to reduce the trade dependency on China. Well, this month, there's a report that states how China's exports shrank much faster than expected in May, while imports extended declines with a grim outlook for global demand, especially from the developed markets, and raising doubts about the fragile economic recovery. It seems that the idea that China was going to provide the world with an escape out of the oncoming global downturn may have been a bit too idealistic. Instead, they seem to be succumbing to the same negative effects the rest of the world is. Just like COVID, poor economic activity is extremely contagious and will spread across the globe. To finish off this section, Seaborne's report once again holds steady their figures from previous about the changes to the global fleet, with both the Handymax and Panamax set to lose 15% of their fleet in the next 5 years and their future order book not sufficient to replace this loss. If we now look to the Baltic Index, it has had quite a poor month, but a very steep decline. It started out at 1,552 and climbed above 1,600 before dropping significantly and ending the month at 972. This is a stark contrast to the last year, as in May 2022, the index hit a high of 3,367. This is a dramatic change over the course of the year, and it's actually quite a good indicator of how global economic activity has played out for the past 12 months. Most or any signs of positivity keep getting knocked straight back and leading us to this era of uncertainty. The index is currently sat at 1,065 as of today. While the index may have fallen, the spot and FFA markets have remained relatively steady with not much movement since I presented to you last month. The current spot price is the only one that has noticeably fallen, which is currently sitting at $9,100 per day, while the FFA markets are currently at $11,100 for Q3 and $11,600 for Q4. And with Q1 of 2024 remaining very low at $9,500 per day, albeit this is actually an increase from last month. It also hasn't been a great few weeks for the global economies either, as inflation and interest rates are a heavily discussed topic as always, with the interest rate in the Eurozone hiked to a more than 20-year high. The European Central Bank has increased its benchmark rate to 3.5%, up 25 basis points, making borrowing more expensive. As it said, inflation has been too high for too long. Christine Lagarde also said rates will continue to be increased. Are we done? Have we finished the journey? No, we're not at the destination, according to the ECB president. She continued, it is very likely that the case we will increase rates in July. In new forecasts released by the regulator, it was also said there'll be two more years before inflation is brought down to its 2% target, while latest figures show inflation was 6.1% in the countries using the euro and will only fall to 5.1% this year and 3% in 2024. On top of this, though, the eurozone entered a recession in the first quarter of this year, and economics are not optimistic about the coming months. The bloc reported a GDP of minus 0.1% for Q1 after revised growth figures were actually released. Firstly, it was reported the eurozone grew by 0.1% over the first 3 months. This pronouncement adjusted down after Germany also cut its figures for the same period and effectively entered a recession. Ireland has actually also made a downward revision to its growth rate, now showing a contraction of almost 5%. This then marks the second consecutive quarter of negative growth, which now means we are in a recession. The larger fear about Europe's recession, though, is actually the spillover effects and what it could cause for the rest of the world. The Fed in New York were recently asked, if Europe sneezes, is it possible that the United States could catch a cold? Well, the answer, according to Federal Reserve economists Jose Akinci and Paolo Pezzente, is that it's more like when Europe catches a cold, the rest of the world sneezes. And if you look at previous economic crises in Europe, it's clear that they have affected the US. But the US economy has actually been surprisingly resilient this year, but painful bumps are likely coming, according to Goldman Sachs CEO David Solomon. While in the UK, it seems that they are stuck in a situation of stagflation, not sure which way to go. With no growth in output since last July and inflationary pressures intensifying as wage growth increases, almost no one is satisfied with the way their economy is working. It's believed that the UK has suffered the worst of both worlds, or both sides of the Atlantic. It has had the sort of strong demand seen in the US that has led to labour shortages, while they also experienced the blow from high energy prices, just like the rest of Europe faced from the Ukraine war. It is uncertain the best way to fix their issues, as there's now support for no more interest rate hikes. The only thing that is certain, though, is that they cannot allow wages and prices to continuously drive each other any higher. Now, for the final section that I have, is that I want to discuss the briefing itself. You will see the figures in the first section showing the active RSA of 77.54 million euro, with 70.57 million euro fully allocated. If we look to the right-hand side, we can see the credit index has increased to 85. This is slightly above the average we expect, which is within the 70s. The trading figure for the month was 14.34 million euro, with all available ETR in the market fully utilized. Treasury performance was 11.68 million euro for the same period, and the exchange's performance continues to be ahead of all prior years by 30.305%. Our list of then top 10 largest holdings and also the top 10 rated once again contain regular appearances from the likes of the HSE and Nestle. At the top of the list is Balfour Beatty and Skanska Constein. And as we know, these are two of our mining debtors involved in HS2. This is Balfour Beatty's fourth month in a row on the list and Skanska's fifth, while also being the fourth month in a row that they are the two largest holdings on the exchange. Tarmac, Aggregate Industries and Bread Aggregates round off our mining contingent. Our donut graphs are showing a well-diversified spread of investments, with the largest sections in wholesale and retail, health and community, and construction. These sectors have identifiable debtors on the top 10 largest holdings listed, Nestle representing wholesale and retail, HSE and Lucan Lodge for health and community, and there are mining companies in construction. It's great to see that even though construction has the top three largest holding debtors for May, it still only comes in as the third largest sector. This is another example of the diversification we enforce on ourselves. If we look to the performance sector, we see 2023 M05 versus 2022 M05 was down 8.28% at 14.34 million euro traded for May of this year, compared to 15.64 million euro in May of 2022. Volumes continue to remain down by 14.94% as the value to volume ratio increases in line with higher value and quality traded ETR. Investor redemptions increased again for May to 2.714 million euro. As the exchange's demand for fund grows, as our business grows, we hope to see this reduce in the coming weeks. There is a repeat of the credit index of 85. And for a third month in a row, a mining trade with the HS2 project in the UK was the single largest trade at 2.268 million sterling. Our trend section charts the interest rate for the month running outside of the current demand fixed and term rates. As you all know by now, we once again have increased our investment rates on offer for our three products. As we've discussed at our recent briefings, we will continue to monitor the market and will act if needed. The trend section further discusses how demand for investable is below where it should be, but with a combination of these new rates and exchange traded securities, it's predicted this imbalance will be rectified. On ETS, we have been continuing our market research with help also from yourselves. For this, we are very thankful. Our thought process that the market wants regulated investments has only been backed up more by yourselves and your input. And as before, the briefing document ends with a repeat of the RSA figure of 77.54 million euro. And that concludes this month's briefing for May 2023. Thank you very much.